AM. Let's dig right in and move on to approval of the minutes from October 22nd. Has everyone had a chance to review those? And are there any comments on the minutes today or from October 22nd? I'm hearing no.
I will move to approve the minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Moving on to item number 3, possible discussion with authorized neighborhood council representatives. I don't see anybody here present. Now let's move on to item number 4, the proposed stipulation. Mr. Platel and Mr. Colon.
Richard Platel, Director of Enforcement, Los Angeles City Ethics Commission.
Good morning. Good morning. I think you may want to pull it even closer to you.
Thank you. Good morning, President Murray, Commission members. The stipulation before you for your consideration involves respondent Gary Benjamin, the sole proprietor of Respondent Alchemy Planning. The respondents are not represented by counsel and are not present today. Benjamin and Alchemy have stipulated to 15 counts in violation of the municipal lobbying ordinance by failing to register as a lobbyist, failure to register as a lobbyist firm, and failing to file disclosure reports for city lobbying activities from the second quarter of 2017 through the second quarter of 2019. Charter Section 706C3 establishes the penalty formula for administrative actions taken by the Ethics Commission. The maximum penalty is the greater of $5,000 per violation, or 3 times the amount that was improperly reported, spent, or received. Based on the stipulated facts and counts in this matter, the maximum penalty is up to $75,000. The Ethics Commission is required to consider all relevant circumstances before assessing the penalty. In mitigation, Mr. Benjamin and Alchemy cooperated in the investigation, saved Ethics Commission resources by entering into a stipulated settlement prior to the preparation of a probable cause report, and have filed all required disclosure reports. Also, they have no prior enforcement history with the Ethics Commission, and there is no evidence of any deliberate violation or intent to conceal or deceive. In aggravation, the respondents did not consult with the Ethics Commission staff about how to comply with the law, and the violations are serious. Based on the facts and circumstances, staff recommends resolving this matter by imposing a penalty of $37,500 against Benjamin and Alchemy. The recommended penalty is intended to promote the equitable treatment of respondents, encourage the early resolution of violations, and reflect the serious nature of the violations. Thank you.
And also, you would introduce your investigator in this matter, please.
I'm sorry. That's Stephen Cullen, investigator, Los Angeles City Ethics Commission, is also here. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, we just received an updated stipulation, which changes the facts just a little bit.
Yeah.
And says instead of, as in the original document, that the organization and the individual met with elected officials, that there was a, it's revised, so now they met with city officials but not actual elected officials. If you could clarify that, please.
Yes. Mr. Benjamin, we had discussions with Mr. Benjamin on Friday about the wording of the stipulation. Something came up, and he noticed at a later time. He looked at this prior but didn't catch it. So we spoke on Friday. We talked and decided to change the wording in the stipulation. I think we took 3 or 4 words out and moved them around a bit. But Mr. Benjamin did not meet with elected officials.
Okay.
So we wanted to make that clear in the stipulation.
Okay. And does that change your position as to what the proposed sanction should be?
No.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions for Mr. Platel?
In mitigation, part of it was that there was no evidence of a deliberate violation or intent to conceal, But on the other hand, we also, you also say as you that he worked for a registered city lobbying firm before forming. And not only that, he's a former planning deputy for a city council district. So what does deliberate violation mean in that? That if you could explain the two of those things together.
I think Mr. Benjamin at one point had some questions about whether he needed to file as a lobbyist and do the required disclosure reports. And he asked a colleague if he should have filed as a lobbyist and filed the disclosure reports, and the colleague told him no, instead of calling the Ethics Commission, where he would have been given the correct information. So I don't think he deliberately went out of his way to violate these rules. However, he didn't do his due diligence in finding out whether or not he should have been filing the proper forms as a lobbyist and as a lobbyist firm and his disclosure requirements. So we don't believe it was deliberate, but still, he did not do his due diligence. He asked a colleague instead of going to the Ethics Commission. But he was aware of the rules. Yeah, he was aware of the rules. And I think he was trying to comply when he asked a colleague, but he didn't ask the right person.
Okay. Was this a whistleblower complaint? Without disclosing the too much?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
We have so many complaints, I'm going through my mind on this one. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anyone else have any questions?
Do you know, was the colleague that he supposedly asked within the planning department or outside the planning department?
I don't believe so, but I'm not sure. I can't answer for Mr. Benjamin on that.
Okay. Is there any public comment on this?
Yes, we do have a public comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We do have Mr. Hertz from the Sutton firm.
Good morning, Madam President, members of the Commission. Bradley Hertz of the Sutton Law Firm here on behalf of the Sutton Law Firm and not any particular clients. I always learn before launching into any constructive criticism, it's nice to give a compliment. So I will congratulate the Commission and staff for the legislative victory at City Council with regard to the developer contribution ban. For the record, that doesn't mean I necessarily think it's good public policy, but it is an accomplishment to create something, have it get through committee, have it get through council, and so we look forward to helping clients comply with it, and congratulations on that. So moving to the constructive criticism part, we very strongly feel that the approach being taken with regard to punishing permit expediters for not filing lobbying reports is really a misguided policy, and that what this commission should do as a matter of improving the public policy is step back, not approve items like today's agenda item, and I mentioned the same thing in the October meeting about the Pacific Crest item, because really permit expediters are a different breed from the type of traditional lobbyists that we think of. They're not trying to change laws. They're not trying to, pigeonhole the mayor or council members and approve major projects. They are really administrative folks who are helping clients comply with the law. Most of them are sole practitioners, small businesses with small clients, and they are interacting at a lower level in terms of the hierarchy of the power structure at City Hall. They're at building and safety and planning, and they're at neighborhood councils, and they certainly are interacting with the city, but they are not doing the kinds of things that merit $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 punishments. We think education needs to be much greater in terms of making information available so they can know the law before they get punished for not knowing the law. And we have a letter that spells that out in more detail.
Yes, please.
Mr. Hurst, just a moment. Have you had an opportunity to put this issue before our colleagues at the Planning Commission or Building and Safety Commission? We can't force them to put things on their forms, so I'm wondering if you've carried this conversation other places.
We have not directly. We in an October letter, we reached out to the staff here, and as a result of that, there is a, I think, very helpful two-page document now on the website here, but we have not reached out to other city departments. We certainly could do that. We think coming from the Ethics Commission and explaining how it makes sense for their forms to be modified to educate people with applications before the city would be better, but maybe a kind of a 1-2 approach would be better, that we could work together with staff to educate building and safety and planning and say, look, if you add this little disclaimer to your forms, we think we'd get a lot more compliance. We'd focus on education rather than enforcement. So I'm happy to do that. It just didn't seem like the right time yet.
It's the right time. Just as you commented earlier, we had a victory of sorts through City Council, and that was based on a lot of points of entry into that process. So highly suggest that
great.
Would be a great strategy for you.
Great, and we'll follow up with staff in that regard, and I think that could lead to some good results.
Just one more thing, Mr. Hertz. I understand you're at most of our meetings, and your firm is we're always happy to hear comments from you, but we got this at midnight last night. If you could be a little more expeditious. I know you may have just gotten the agenda late last week, but if you could be a little more expeditious in getting us the document so we're not perusing it on the morning of the hearing, so we'll have at least a day or two to take a look at it. And I know the way it works, you may not have know that this item was going to be on the agenda, but I would just counsel you. It's a little bit frustrating for us. You have some great things, and we want to hear from you, but just make sure, hopefully, sit in a little bit earlier, just out of convenience to the staff.
Apologies for that, and this is a crazy week, as you might imagine.
It is
with
for
the
everybody
March election
here.
And things for the November election, but yes, we will do our very best to get things to you earlier, and thank you for reading it.
Thank you.
Ask the staff just to respond to what their educational efforts currently are or what's in process.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm happy to respond to that. We, as Mr. Hertz mentioned, did create a two-page document specifically for planning and land use professionals. The Building and Safety Department has worked with us seamlessly, and that is now displayed at their offices and their counters, both here in City Hall and at their satellite offices throughout the city. We are still communicating with the planning department about having them display that as well at their counters, and we're hoping to be able to move forward on that as soon as possible. It is on our website. It is available, and so we are doing everything that we can to work with those departments to get the word out.
To my point to Mr. Hertz, we don't have the ability to ask the Building and Safety or Planning Commission to put it on their checklist or the back of their speaker forms or...
That's exactly right. Or even their public counters, even just to have the document that we created available for folks who walk up to do business with that department. We cannot insist that they do that.
Does anyone have any other questions?
And I recognize that, but there are still conversations ongoing at the moment, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
Conversations regarding?
Regarding the ability to have them on the counters or in other. I'm sorry, I was the one who didn't have the various modes of communicating. I think from the last time we talked about this, we were anxious that it occur, and obviously a lot of progress has been made, but I'm hoping that even more progress will be made, and if there's anything that commissioners who are interested in this can do, we would like to be part of that conversation.
That's great. Yeah, thank you.
And I imagine... Also for staff, this has come up before where there's a group that feels they're not the true priority, quote unquote, of this commission. And so if they, and they didn't have enough education. In the letter, it says they inadvertently and understandably failed to file. I'm sure that you've heard that before, and so I'm curious. And I'm not saying, I'm not weighing in on whether that's true or not. I'm just saying it's something that I know I've heard before while sitting on this commission from different groups. What is, and of course I believe that education is always something we should make more robust, but the law is written as it is, and the administrative penalty is written as it is. What is, in the past, what have been some strategies to support the community that's at issue here, while also understanding that enforcement can be a tool of education as well?
Yeah, I think the biggest support for the communities that we regulate is education. The goal is to help people understand what the laws are and why it's important to comply so that they don't find themselves having stepped over the line either purposefully or inadvertently. So education really is an important component of our work. And we do everything that we can to communicate the information, but as you say, enforcement is also a very effective educational tool. The lobbying laws have been, for many years, they were not actively enforced, but for the last few years they have been actively enforced, and so the information is out there that these laws matter, just like all of the other laws within our jurisdiction, that they will be enforced.
Okay, thank you. Now let's dig into the stipulation. I believe, Mr. Platon, you're asking or you're recommending a violation or penalty of $37,500, which is half.
Half, yes.
Okay. Is there any discussion on that, one way or the other?
Well, I certainly agree that we should, in each and every case, look at all of the facts and determine the extent to which there should be mitigation or should not be mitigation. And it seems to me, based upon the knowledge that he had or should have had in his two other employments in this regard, that there is substantial basis for enforcement here. And yet, on the other hand, after you did your full investigation and you spoke to him and judged his credibility, apparently you believe that it was more carelessness than an intent to deceive. So for that reason, I would be very happy to recommend this stipulation and a deduction of one half of what the total penalty could have been.
Any further discussion?
I would have to agree with Vice President Orton. I heard very clearly the concern about the uninformed population here that may stumble into this enforcement, and I think that is a conversation as we look at further enforcements, but I think very generous characterization by Mr. Patel of the intent behind, but someone who has had two previous positions, one within the government and one in a lobbying, it does not seem that stumbling into this is in that category of someone who innocently, in fact, they recognize something may be up, they just ask the wrong person for advice. So for that reason, I don't necessarily think, and we'll see what comes down the pike in future meetings, but I don't think this case is necessarily the pure innocent that stumbled into a situation in which they had no reason to suspect that issues would not arise as to their requirement of being registered as a lobbyist within the city.
Thank you. Anything, Commissioner Campos?
Sure, I agree with my fellow commissioners, maybe for a slightly different reason. I think it's not clear to me that this is the kind of target that we would normally prioritize if we had in a triage approach. But there is a lot of, we're firmly in a new era of scrutiny on this realm of activity in City Hall, which is reflected by the whistleblower complaint that led to this action in the first place. And now it is before the commission, we must act appropriately, given that it's before us. And I think it's important to note that it wasn't a whistleblower complaint, because these are not actions that I am assuming staff is going out to drum up there in the gotcha, like the letter said. It could have been, which I don't believe at all it is. I think it's reflective of a larger climate that is driven by the public and folks looking at City Hall and bringing these to our attention, and now we must respond.
Well, and I think that's a very important point, and I'm glad you brought that one up.
Commissioner Davis.
One more question for the staff. We've had a couple of these now. How do the others that are out there go about curing any past deficiencies, bringing themselves current? What is the mechanism, and how are we addressing this? I believe I've seen something where they can go back 4 years on this. How are we getting people to do what they need to do under these circumstances?
Well, we do pay attention to council files and other business before the city that we are aware of. And if it becomes apparent to us that someone may need to register, then we do reach out to those individuals. In terms of mitigation, if anyone has not registered when they should have or has not filed a report when they should have, we always encourage them to register or file as quickly as possible, and that that voluntary compliance goes a long way toward mitigation.
Thank you. So do we have a motion to approve the penalty for this case at $37,500?
I move to approve the stipulation as presented and amended earlier this morning.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. And now moving on to item number 5. Mr. Joseph.
Good morning.
Tyler Joseph, Director of Policy. And before you for item number 5, we have a recusal review for a Mr. Joseph Halper. Mr. Halper is a member of the Board of Recreation and Parks Commissioners, and he has served on that board since November of 2013. In this current review, Mr. Halper has recused himself from 4 matters during the review period. 3 of those stemmed from his membership on the board of the Los Angeles Parks Foundation. Now, that is a nonprofit set up to support the Board of Recreation and Parks through grants and other programs. And all 4 of the items that Mr. Halper recused himself from during this review period were approved unanimously by the board. These items also make up less than 2% of all the items that were considered by that board during the review period. And as a result of that, we have determined that these recusals were not significant in terms of number or impact. And we recommend that finding no divestment be required of Commissioner Halper, and that the resolution in Attachment D be adopted for that purpose.
Thank you. Any questions from any of the commissioners? Do we have a motion to approve the review of the recusal?
I move to approve the recusal.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries. Now moving on to item number 6.
All right. Thank you very much. That is Mr. Edward Renwick. Mr. Renwick is the Vice President of the Board of Harbor Commissioners, and Mr. Renwick has also served on that board since November of 2013. He was the subject of 1 previous recusal review. That was in April of 2016. That review found that no divestment was required of Mr. Renwick, and those recusals primarily stemmed from his involvement in the banking industry, investments and relationships that he had in that industry from private company that he founded and income that he received from another investment company that he previously worked for. And now in the present instance, Mr. Halper recused himself from 8 matters during the review period. Again, all 8 of those recusals related to his investments and relationships in the banking industry. 5 of those involved closed session items discussing pending litigation or potential litigation. And the remaining 3 items that were voted on were all approved unanimously in his absence. And these recusals made up less than 4% of the board's business during this review period. And as a result, we have also determined here that the recusals were not significant in terms of number or impact. And because of that, we recommend that finding no divestment be required and adopting the resolution, this time in Attachment E, for that purpose.
Any questions?
So no. Moved. Oh, sorry.
No, not a question, just a comment. And I was glad that you attached the prior one. I was glad after I realized I was halfway through the prior one and saying, this isn't making sense to me. I did, but I think it was a good idea because that shows the whole pattern and whether it is anything we should be concerned about.
Motion to accept the recommendation of staff.
Thank you.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposition? Hearing none. Motion carries. Moving on to item number 7, determination regarding the sufficiency of the matching funds trust fund.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
City law requires us before every city election to assess the trust fund for the matching funds program and determine whether there is enough funding in the, whether the balance is sufficient to provide full funding for every candidate who might qualify during that upcoming election. And we are heading quickly down to the 2020 elections. We had a candidate filing week in early November, and following that, we have 45 candidates who have agreed to participate in the matching funds program. If all of those candidates do qualify and receive the maximum in both the primary and the general elections, that will mean payouts of approximately $9.4 million. The balance in the trust fund over the course of the election will be the better part of $21.8 million. So we are recommending that the determination be made that there is sufficient funding to fully fund all qualified candidates, and there is a resolution in Attachment A for that purpose.
Thank you. Mr. Kwan. Sorry.
Reflecting on last week, I still think this matching funds reform we did last year is the biggest thing to go through council on reform. The best check we have against corruption is competitive elections. If it's okay with you, I'd like to just cover a few things before I head downstairs to say hi to Herb. Wanted to thank Commissioner.
You have an item on number 9. Do you want to speak?
Yeah,
with
I'm going
to speak on that. With regards to that as well?
Yeah.
Okay, no problem.
I wanted to thank Commissioner Orden for coming to the Rules Committee and pressing upon the council members that they should lower the $1,000 disclosure threshold for behested payments. Council Member Kikorian uplifted your comments at the meeting and made sure there was an amendment there, so that still is alive. I would encourage you for future advocacy, consider what you can do, even if it's just submitting a letter to the council file. You know, you last visited this in February. It might have been helpful to have commissioners weigh in and say, hey, we proposed this thing for a number of good reasons, and this is why. I think it's also important to remember that $320,000 per year in 4 positions are currently estimated to be needed for this database, money that could be much better spent on disclosure and transparency and making data digestible for your average voters. Councilmember Bonin introduced a motion for full public financing last week. I'd encourage you to just see what happens. Let's see council take that through Rules Committee and advance it before we get into that discussion, because there are a whole lot of questions about full public financing that need to be answered, and your conversation would be informed by them giving some direction. Lastly, I want to talk about the meeting schedule. Last year, I came here and mentioned that it would be helpful to have a more accessible meeting time. In particular, even if we don't move from the mornings, I think it's really important that we consider moving from a day other than Tuesday. It is the worst day for civic engagement in the city of LA if you're trying to get people here. We have council meetings downstairs. We have the police commission across the street. We have the Board of County Supervisors that also meets. And then over at Metro, we've got the Civilian Oversight Commission. So there are just a lot of different directions that people are pulled on mornings on Tuesday, so I hope you consider trying to find out if there's a better day, even if it's just a Monday or a Thursday or even a Wednesday or a Friday. There's a lot less going on Wednesdays and Fridays even than there are council meetings. Thank you for your time. Really appreciate y'all. Okay. Have a good one.
Thank you. Sean McMorris.
Hi. Good morning, commissioners. I'll be brief. I'm with California Common Cause. I just wanted to say that we really do appreciate all the work that you've done regarding the matching funds and the amendments that were recently passed. They will go a long way in, improving the integrity of elections and accountability and transparency in Los Angeles. So I want to thank you for that good work, and we look forward to working with the commission and continuing to work with staff to further improve elections in California or in Los Angeles.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much. With that, do we have a motion to adopt Resolution A as drafted by the Ethics Commission with regards to the matching funds?
I move to adopt the provisions in A.
Second. All in favor?
Ms. Holt, how does this push us or position us as far as 2022? This is a much smaller election, and I note that a little less than half of the funds are being used here, and next one is the big one. Are we going to be in a good place at that time for the onslaught of candidates?
Yeah, that's a great question, and we believe that we will be. Every year, by law, the city is required to make an appropriation into the trust fund. The amount is $2 million adjusted for CPI. It's a little over $3.5 million this year. So over the next 2 years between now and the next 2022 elections, we will get about $7 million added into the trust fund. In 2013 was the last time we had open seats for the citywide races, which is the same scenario that we'll have in 2022. And I believe, I could be wrong about this, but I believe that we paid out approximately $13 million in matching funds during that election. So I think that we're going to be in good shape.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So we've had a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Motion carries. Moving on to item number 8, professional services agreement.
It's me again. We have contracted with the California Office of Administrative Hearings for ALJ services when we have enforcement matters that proceed to an administrative hearing. We've had that contract in place for 15 years now. And the current version of it has expired, and so this is a recommendation that we renew for another 5-year term. The maximum that would be paid by the city under this contract over those 5 years would be $48,000. There is a resolution in Attachment A that would both approve the contract agreement, is actually what it's called. It's their standard agreement, and authorize me as the executive director to execute that contract on behalf of the commission.
All right. Are there any questions?
We have had, in the time that I've been here, we have not utilized the Office of Administrative Hearings for that period of time. I did not look through the contract with care, but is it an ability to pay that amount of money, or is it a standby contract?
Yeah, that's a great question, too. It is not a mandatory payment. It's a contract that allows us to use their services as we need them. If we don't need them, then nothing will be paid.
Hearing no further discussion, is there a motion to approve of Resolution A with regards to the professional services agreement?
Yes, I move to approve that agreement as explained.
Thank you. Second? Is there a second? Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Motion carries. Number 9, regular meeting schedule. Have all the commissioners had an opportunity to pull out their
Yes.
iPhones, cell phones, Rolodex, handwritten. I'm old school, so yeah, I do everything in a diary and compare notes. So is there, are there any problems with any of or a conflict with regards to the schedule?
I would be interested in Ms. Holt addressing the points Mr. Kwan brought up about it seems everything happens on a Tuesday and how we, I'm not being new to the, relatively new to the commission, how we landed on Tuesday when everything else is going on as the date that this is when we hold our meetings.
Yeah, I am not sure what the answer to that question is. They have been held on Tuesdays for so long that it far predates me. I think from the inception of the Ethics Commission, the meetings have been held on Tuesdays. There are conflicts with us for us with Fridays because that's when the Rules Committee meets. I know in the past that former commissioners have appreciated having meetings on Tuesdays just in terms of their personal schedules, but also because if something is scheduled in council, that's one of the days that our items could be considered. So if they're here for a meeting, they could easily go down to city council chambers. But we can certainly talk about having meetings on different days if that is something that you would be interested in pursuing.
I would be fine in approving the schedule with staff maybe quizzing, you talking among your staff to see if there's conflicts, as well as polling the commissioners. And if there's something we can do to add to civic engagement, which is our mandate, then I'm in favor of doing that.
Great. We would be happy to do some polling of you and the staff and others.
And if there is any reason way back when in terms of history why it is always a Tuesday, that we have to change anything.
But. Yeah, we'll see if we can dig something up.
Yes.
Okay. So thank you for your comments. This always comes up every year, unfortunately, and we're all very busy people. There have been suggestions that it be in the evening, which I don't know if it's convenient for everybody. We could think about that for next year. Again, there's always a little bit of discussion about this, and I appreciate Mr. Kwan's comment, and he's very civically engaged, and he's has his hands in a lot of different places. So we do appreciate that, and we want his comments as well as the comments of our other people, community activists. But on that note,
Can I just say,
sure.
I would vote if it. It's only 6 days of the whole year, and I feel like it shouldn't be what's convenient for the commissioners. It should be what makes sense for the community. And if maybe since the commission was conceived, there's been all. It sounds like there's all these other competing meetings now that maybe didn't used to compete. And if, I mean. Probably for most of us, changing it from Tuesday to Wednesday would make really no effect on 6 days of our year. And I would be open to doing what's in the best interest of the public and changing my schedule for that because I feel like that's what we signed up for as commissioners.
I think we all agree at that, but it's the people who appear before us, and if there is some reason and we would like to know how they will be better served.
And I would agree with Commissioner Campos that, you know, if Wednesday or Thursday becomes a day, more than happy to adjust my calendar for that, especially this far out. So maybe we can approve this with February 18th coming back, but if you could make sure that those work for your staff with the guidance that we could look to accommodate our schedule. After the February meeting to adjust to a Wednesday or a Thursday or a Monday.
I would even say perhaps February because that's the day, Tuesday after a holiday weekend. So that's another issue with the Tuesdays because then if we get these late public comment letters, it's challenging to even receive them in time, you know, to be back present and I'm just trying to think through what's in the best interest of getting the most input from the public while we, you know, may not always agree with it. It's really helpful to have a lot of input from the public, and I've noticed several times this past year, people have said, I would have liked to come or I have to leave now. And that almost at every meeting, someone has said, I have to leave now and I wish I could stay for this discussion, but I have to go to this other meeting happening downstairs. So I think that would be, we would be a stronger commission with more input from the public.
One other logistical consideration is the use of this meeting room. This belongs to the City Council. We do not control the calendar for any of the meeting rooms on the 10th floor, so that's one thing that we do have to factor into when meetings can be held. But am I understanding correctly that you would like to approve this schedule now, but in February revisit perhaps moving all of the future meetings for next year to Wednesday?
If we could.
Thursday, I don't have a preference on
okay.
the day. I think the mm-hmm. points are made, but yeah, that's where I would be because I do recognize there are logistics that need to
yeah.
to be met.
Okay,
right,
well, we can certainly do that.
So if we could have, again, based upon our discussion, a motion to currently approve the dates and with the caveat that we may revisit the issue next year when we talk about logistics and see if it's feasible to change the date. Is there a motion?
I so move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposition? None. Motion carries. That's our last action item. Let's see, it's almost 10:30, and I think we could take a lot of these under submission, but I just wanted to say, and then I'll hear from Ms. Holt. First of all, I want to thank you all for the tremendous work, my fellow commissioners and all the staff who've done such an outstanding job this year. We should be very proud of ourselves for what we've accomplished as far as matching funds, lobbying, regulation, and finally our last legislative packet where our, of course, I'm bragging, our proposals were more comprehensive than those of Councilman Ruse. However, his at least part of his package was approved, and I know it's frustrating for everybody because we spent such a long time working on this. And, of course, I would have loved to see behested payments get approved. The council doesn't seem to be quite there, and we need to keep on them about this and the Rules Committee so we could bring the matter up. Commissioner Campos and I, along with Mr. Joseph, participated in the town hall. There was a lot of opposition to behested payments. People are just not ready to wrap their brain around it. It is a transformational ordinance and idea. For those of you who weren't there at the council meeting last week, there were several of the council members who did express interest in behested payments and in lowering the threshold. They were there. But then there were other council members who were very reluctant to wrap their brain around it because they do a lot of work in the community and they feel that there's a stigma attached to a lot of the charities. And that was also reiterated at the town hall meeting. So our work is still not done. I mean, we spent a lot of time, all of the commissioners did, and different subcommittees with the matching funds, myself and Commissioner Davis, and also Commissioner Orden and Commissioner Campos working on these very different issues. So I really want to take the time to thank the staff for your hard work and your education. And I think we have something to be very proud of. Again, it's not over. We still have some time. It is not over. And I also want to thank the City Attorney's Office for drafting the ordinance after our input and input from community activists. So it is a little frustrating because we really spent so much time talking and getting input from the community, and we didn't get everything that we wanted, but it is a substantial victory because we are one of the first cities to adopt such a comprehensive campaign finance reform ordinance. So I just want to give everyone a round of applause and give yourselves a round of applause, also to my fellow commissioners. And I hope everyone has a very happy holiday. And Ms. Holt.
Thank you very much. I heartily second all of those statements. The staff has done a tremendous job this year. The commissioners have done a tremendous job this year, and together we have accomplished a lot on many fronts. Just to give an idea of some of the year-end numbers, the staff this year has had over 22,000 compliance assistance contacts, meaning advice interactions with people that we regulate. They have processed over 20,000 filings. We've held over 1,200 trainings. We have had nearly 200 outreach projects in the last year with our newly constituted strategic communications team. Our website has been viewed over 251,000 times this year, and we've had 118,000 searches on our public data portal. So there is a lot going on, and you and the staff are instrumental in that. So I am very appreciative for all the work that we've accomplished this year, and I'm really looking forward to what we will do next year on Tuesdays or Wednesdays or Thursdays. One final note that I would make is to introduce our new special investigator, Mr. Rodney Stewart. Is here fresh from Kentucky, where he served as the Inspector General. He also served as a special investigator for the Ohio Ethics Commission and for the State Bar of California. So we are thrilled to welcome him to our ranks officially on Monday. But he made a special concession to be here today so that he could be introduced and you could get to know each other. Great. So welcome.
Welcome.
And that's all I have, but I would be happy to answer questions.
It is 10:30. Mr. Commissioner Davis always is kind of, I feel the presence of him always.
He loves an efficient meeting.
he loves an efficient meeting, and I hope all of you do too. So with that, meeting is adjourned, unless there is an objection to that.
Thank you, Madam President, for your leadership this year.
Thank you all.
Thank you.